SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, hour three, and have had two extensive conversations already this morning. Marcus Hirsch joined us from Hong Kong, and Jane Lyon, Summerwind Equine. And another name that you've heard me reference for years, the Ullwellings, and the consistent winners as owners, and they've had an extended period of success, and we share an affection for the Shearer family, and I think that in part one of the reasons I got to kind of focus on Bill and Al. And it seems like this has been a year for them that has very much kind of come to full flower. And Al's traveling, he's in the islands, but Bill's available to talk to us. Bill Ullwelling, congratulations on a great weekend and really a special year for you guys.
Well, thank you, Steve, and good morning. Yes, it was a very special weekend for us. I mean, first graded win for Al and myself. It took quite a few years to get, so it was really worthwhile.
That was Pumpkin Rumble.
Oh, man. You know, I was sitting with Gary's. Gary used to train Pumpkin, and then we moved him up to Canada because he liked turf and the synthetic up there. And so Gary takes a lot of good heart into the horse himself because he's the one that claimed him for us, and he raced under Gary and Richie and Merrill. I mean, the whole Shear family, they're like brothers and dads to us. And to see him get past, I just was standing by Merrill Shearer, and I go, well, second will do. You know, it's still better than third and fourth, and the way he fought back is quite unbelievable. And it was a very, very good horse. Those two horses were very good. You can't say enough about Mel Mitch and Kevin Attard. The job he's done up there for us is unbelievable.
Well, and Kevin runs 1-2 in here because he trains Mel Mitch, and the part of this that's really rewarding. I mean, Pumpkin is now 7, and he's up to I think it's his best year in earnings. He's got to be over $500,000 after this. And as you mentioned, yep. I didn't realize that, Bill, this was your first graded stake win, the Valedictory.
It was the first. We've tried many, and you remember I've talked to you in the past about Stash, is our old horse, and he tried, and he never got. I think we run third with him, but Pumpkin's got like 2 seconds, 3/3, and graded stakes, so he's a good old boy.
Talk a little bit. We'll talk about the homebred down in Louisiana too. But I want everybody to hear the backstory. And you guys are in construction, and I think you do some demolition too, right?
We do. We build power plants, boilers. We have a crane service in Minnesota. Send out a lot of cranes around the 5-6 state area. And a good friend of ours got us started. We got started 10 years ago. Big Bob, we called him, and he's since passed, but he never missed a race with us. He went to every one of our races. And make a long story short, this homebred that we have, it's called Remember Daisy. And we flew down, Al and I, if you got a minute, it'll be a short story. We flew down to Texas, rented a car. We were going to claim one of two horses. It was either going to be Barry Spitestone or it was going to be Daisy Divine. So we had it all figured out, and we're sitting in the car, and Al and I told Gary, well, somebody paid $95,000 for Barry Spitestone. Somebody paid $6,500 for Daisy Divine. Let's claim, they're smarter than us, let's claim the $95,000 horse. First time out, $30,000. Drops the ticket on Barry Spitestone. The race goes out. Barry Spitestone's leading, Daisy Divine passes. the moral of the story is our horse, Barry Spitestone, went on to make $57,000, and Daisy Devine went on to be a millionaire. We claimed the wrong horse. So this is the mother. This is the first baby out of Barry Spitestone. And we bred her to Ms. Remembered because we liked Ms. Remembered because he always beat us. Every time we raced him, he beat us. So long stride. So we said, remember Daisy, because we'll never forget Daisy Devine.
That is funny. And you know, you took advantage, and I'm curious about the decision to breed in Louisiana. Talk about how your program has evolved and how many mares are you dealing with?
Well, we downsized. At one point in time, we were claiming everything in the country, and we had too many horses. We had 85 horses, and we just kind of pulled the boat back in and said, we need to go, rather than have quantity, we need quality. So we started breeding our own, and we took time, Clay Shears helped us a lot in our breeding program, and the whole Shear family is involved in everything in horse racing, obviously, and that's helped us, and we've got some really nice babies coming up. We have some Candy Reds. We got a lot of good horses, and I'm looking for bigger and better, hopefully. But it's a very tough ball game. And this Daisy, I think she's won 5 out of 8 races. She got an 88 buyer in that. So 3-year-old against the older horses, I was pretty impressed. And the Louisiana program, we got into that because of the money. The breeders program is phenomenal, and can't say enough about Fairgrounds. It's a good place to run.
And really, you've pretty much picked and developed the program. I can tell, just by sheer feel, and you're making decisions, based on practicality, but. Canterbury close by at home, during the summers, the winters, down to Fairgrounds, the move, including, putting horses up at Woodbine, you really, and you're using, under, not under the radar horsemen, but, kind of, again, lower profile, and yet you look at the success you've had and the kind of numbers, that you've accrued. It, obviously it's not a winning, it's not a financial moneymaker typically, but, you obviously are getting the most for your money.
Well, when you deal with guys like the Shear family and Attard, Kevin Attard, I can't say his group that he has up there. I mean, you look at his numbers, and it's just, they're phenomenal. I mean, he's I think he's third leading trainer up there, but his hands on is, and his communication in this game, I'm sure you well know that you got to talk to each other. The trainer's got to talk to the owner. It's kind of got to be a teamwork. The jockey's got to talk to the owner, got to talk to the trainer. And Enrico Da Silva's having an awesome meet up there. And I can't say enough about Mitchell Merle. He's been riding a lot of our horses. And I think if you look at the future, I think you're going to see his name on a lot of stakes horses.
He's a very good rider. Absolutely, yeah. And the opportunity for you guys, for you and Al, how often when you're at home, during the summer you can go to Canterbury readily, but how often during the winter and travel to see the horses run?
Well. We get out a lot. The wife and I flew down to Fairgrounds, and then I called Kevin. He's up in Canada because we race Saturday, and he thought we were going to fly back up to Toronto. But I've been up there enough times for second and third, and I thought, well, we got a good shot down here in the Fairgrounds. So we went there, and we should have went to both places. But we're getting some frequent flyer miles, but the horses will bring you to the race, and we're going to go there.
How much you guys bettors? You bet much?
And of course, when the horse goes off like Punkin there, you had to play the exotics because you couldn't make anything on the win. There was a lot of money bet on me, paying $310. So, maybe I bet too much, but I enjoy it. I'm not like the big bettors. I mean, to me, $1,000 a race, that's a lot.
Absolutely.
I'd rather let him win and let him be the horse.
Well, and Al, you know, yeah, Al bets.
Al doesn't bet our horses because he doesn't want to jinx them. He goes, no, if I bet it, we're going to lose. So he puts a little on, but it's a good father-son combination.
I love it. For decision making and for those that want to get in the game, what has been the biggest pleasure? What has been most difficult for you guys to really justify the time and energy and expense?
Well, we're the small guy, and in this game, you're playing against some major, major big players. So we'll never be up to that point. But the hardest part is when you do the breeding, everybody says, don't breed because it takes a lot of money. By the time the horse ever gets to the race, and sometimes they don't get to the race, you've easily got the stud fee in $30,000 to $60,000 into horse. And, some don't make it to the track. Some break down. Some just aren't racehorses. So you're taking that risk right there. And we've been very fortunate with having every one of the mares that we've been breeding are horses that we raced and the family come to watch. And so you kind of grow to the horse. And, they're not millionaires. We've never had a millionaire horse. We're the little guy just playing with the $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 win. We're happy.
Stashies
got claimed away from us. He was a heck of a claim. Years ago he took us to a lot of stakes races with Mike Beeler, and we had a great time with him. And he's what got us. He was the fourth horse we ever claimed. And we go, oh,
wow.
This is easy. Well, what he did was he wrecked it because we claimed another 60, 70, 80, 100 after that. We never got one horse like him. He had heart. He was a lot. He could compare him a lot to Punk and Rumble. Those two were just about identical. And the only reason we claimed Punk and Rumble is we had his brother, and he had done pretty well for us. And so we liked the mare, and he's produced. I'm just hoping for future. We've got Remember Daisy. I think she's got a good upside to her as far as Gary's talking about moving her into open stakes now. So we'll see. They both run good buyers. Pumpkin got a 94, and Daisy got an 88 for a three-year-old. That's pretty good for us.
Well, and we should mention with Pumpkin Rumble, that's three straight since a little bit of a freshening. He got about 6-8 weeks off between the start that came after the Nijinsky. He had run well in the Singspiel and then didn't run as well in the Nijinsky. And that was a tougher group. But then a nice little freshening and now on a little bit of a three-race win scheme. What is Kevin going to do with him over the winter?
We're going to give him his time off. He earned his
nice
time off and bring him back, let him be an eight-year-old. If he comes back like he was this year, how he finished off the season, he deserves the break. So he's got himself eight races this year, and he's earned his hay. So let him go be a horse for the winter. And Kevin wants to keep him at a farm up there. The cold's pretty good for legs and ankles. And
sure.
So
I was going to say I was going to ask how what you do for turnouts with when you've got an operation like yours that that's moving around and is obviously on a few different back stretches. If you had a farm that you designate and people that you work with.
Well, yeah, we've been using a farm in Kentucky and a farm up in Canada, so everybody's been working good as a team, and I guess we just got to continue to go that way.
Well, how many horses right now in training?
In training now, I think we're running around 22 in training. Just sent the six babies down to Ocala for breaking, and now Kevin's going to start. He goes down to Gulfstream down there, so he'll get down there and get them ready for some will go to Kevin and some will go to Gary. Just split them up.
Nice. buying philosophy? I mean, in addition to claiming horses, when it's come to acquiring young stock, what has been, you know, what has been the whether there's been some philosophy and 2 year olds in training sale, yearlings? What's been your experience there, Bill?
Well, in the past, every time we bought a horse for $100,000, it made us $20,000. And we just kind of, we keep telling Clay, he wants us to buy the $300,000, but every once in a while, you get the $30,000, the $40,000 horse that can be paid for in a year. And you're looking for the one that slipped through the crack. And we bid on a Super Speedy we got. We got a real nice Ontario bred yearling filly, and Kevin said this, he went to the auction and he said out of every horse it's the only horse he wanted, so we went in a little heavier and we got that. So we're hoping for big things next year out of the two-year-old, and I think she's got a stakes winning brother. Hoping to see what, we haven't named her yet, but see what she can do on the track. Down getting broke, they think the world of her, so time will tell.
Well, you know, in a relatively short period, and you know, you said 10 years, it's been exactly 10 years. You guys have won 300 plus races this year, 10% basically. I mean, you have 750,000 in earnings, and you've made over almost 2,000 starts so far, and it's really the old Welling name is such a consistent presence, you know, in the PPs, and I owe, you know, because you listen, you guys listen, I know you do, and
we watch your show, and what you do for horse racing helps everybody.
Wow. Well. Bill, thank you, but I always take an interest in how you guys are doing, and I looked forward to this because this was a terrific year, and to get that breakthrough graded stake win, and undoubtedly, you know, more to come.
Yeah, that's all we hope for, and hope the horses stay sound and fit. And my granddaughter helps us do a lot of the nicking and the breeding. She's pretty well into it, and she's been doing a lot of articles. She's done some for Keeneland and been doing some handicapping for the different tracks, Hunter. So she's been getting herself around, and she can remember horses that we raced 10 years ago. And at my age, I can't even remember what day they raced or what their name was, you know, but she's got the photographic memory.
Well, and for those, you know, for those that I'm glad you brought Hunter up, and she is a, just an absolute, just a wild fan, and she follows things really closely, and we're friends on Facebook. I follow her on Twitter, and you can follow her, Hunter and Horses, and I assume that is she administering the old Welling Racing website?
She did. And then she got into college and boyfriends, and so she took a little bit of time off. But she tells me last week she's got to get back into it. But when she handicaps, I don't know, she's like you. I mean, she'll write a paragraph on every horse from Turfway Park to wherever. And I mean, I can't stay up with them kids. She's quite the handicapper.
Well, no, she, she's written me before too, and how old? I mean, she's got to be 20, 19?
19.
19. And so that flies in the face of, the people that, the young people aren't interested, and we see all the time, and particularly on Twitter and Facebook, and young people that, the Nexus Racing Club that started up, there's way more younger generation type that are interested in the game and have taken to it, and it's exciting. I mean, from that standpoint, we need that kind of an interest, and we got to applaud it and encourage it.
Yeah, I can't agree. I mean, I agree 100%. I mean, there's more kids getting into it than I think what the news leads on. But she used to, when we have a little farm, and we'd do a layover, horse need time off, she would always take care of them. And the problem is she gets so close to them, then she doesn't want them to leave. But they got to go get the hay paid for.
Well, and speaking of paid for, Al's off in the islands left you to run the business.
Yeah, well, we've got a good group here. These guys have been doing this long enough. They don't need us babysitting them or micromanaging them. We get to go do our plan, but 20-some years, that's what it takes, and that's got to do it. Wow. I still can't say enough about Kevin Attard's group and Gary Shear's group, the jockeys, everything. It's a big teamwork effort.
Well, and we certainly wouldn't be right if we didn't also think about Richie and of course the memorial race 2 weeks ago, and that was the fact that we have to every year now. I mean, it's more than just an opportunity to think about Richie, because everybody thinks about him all the time, special atmosphere, and you guys got the fairgrounds meet off to a good start too, going back to opening week, right? Won one of the overnights.
We won an overnight. We won a claiming race, and Remember Daisy won the $50,000 stakes race down there. Yes, she did.
Yep. It's been a great season, and the weekend really with the valedictory at Woodbine is their season. Just another couple of days left up there. Bill, Merry Christmas to you and all the Yule Wellings. Continued success, and I know that we'll catch up with you somewhere down the road, whether it's at Fairgrounds or I've been trying to get to Canterbury and get a trip there.
Anytime. We'll run into you.
Without fail.
Thank you for giving us a call.
Not at all. Bill Ulwelling, everybody, and the Ulwelling Racing Team. Big weekend. Both trainers, both Kevin Attard and Gary Shearer, with stake wins over the weekend, one with the Homebred in Louisiana, and then the first graded stake for them, which I didn't realize, the Valedictory. It's just funny because Stashies was a horse that we used to follow, and even after he moved away from the Ulwellings, we kept track of Stashies. He was cool. And he must have raced until he was 7, 8 or older. Well, Pumpkin Rumble, and Remember Daisy. That's a great story. The way they named it, they could have claimed Daisy Devine. That's funny. Let's take a timeout. Bottom of the hour coming up. Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Lubricin and Reborn. We haven't had much fall contact with Steve. After the summer, we got a few in, and then leading into Breeders' Cup, we got busy and don't want the year to end without a visit from Dr. Allday. And Dr. Allday, the horse, is going to try to break his maiden tomorrow. He's in the 7th at Gulfstream, in the 7.5 on the grass maiden special. This is DJ. We talked about it with which was pretty funny, just with John Green. Yeah, Dr. Allday, Nick Juarez, second start, and he moves to the grass. He's a will take charge, and we'll ask Steve if he's had to do any work on Dr. Allday. I also am going to use the timing as a chance to bring up that injury that Jane Lyon mentioned. You heard her talk about the growth plate injury for Prince of Thieves, and I'm gonna let Dr. Allday. That's not an injury you hear too often, so we'll let him explain it. Which is what Horse Health Today, brought to you by Lubricin and Reborn, is about. Dr. Stephen Allday joins us next at the races.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
daytime, Southern California thoroughbred racing action continues Thursday through Sunday at Los Alamitos Racecourse with more stakes action coming up on December 15th and 16th. First post is 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific time. The weekend action will feature the Soviet Problem Stakes on Saturday, December 15th, and the King Glorious on Sunday, December 16th. All of the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Racing fans, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick Fours continues. The wager has been well received and the pools figure to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional Pick Six wager. And when the sun goes down, the lights turn on at Los Alamitos with nighttime quarter horse and thoroughbred racing action every Friday through Sunday night. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Great racing is in store at Los Alamitos Racecourse through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Let's go! For more info, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm in the kitchen cooking, and the children upstairs asleep. It's time for old Santa Claus to make his midnight cream toast.
Santa Claus wants some loving.
Yeah, now.
Santa Claus wants some loving.
I know it's something real pretty under that Christmas tree.
We're back at the races. Santa Claus wants some loving, and we love our visits with Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. And we haven't had a chance to talk to Steve since before Breeders' Cup, and got to get in some year-end thoughts. And I also got a topic ripped right out of today's conversations. But first of all, we'll say happy holiday, Merry Christmas, Dr. Stephen Allday. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy holidays to you.
Steve, I appreciate it. I didn't want the year to get away with us. Just two more weeks to wrap up the broadcast year, and got plenty to catch up with you and find out what you've been doing. And, of course, the timing is perfect because Dr. Allday tries to break his maiden tomorrow in the Gulfstream 7th.
Well, you know, we're hoping, we're rooting for Dr. Allday. Good luck to him.
We love it. And, you know, it's we had a wonderful conversation 2 weeks ago with John Green, as it happens. Of course, DJ Stable, and you got Aaron Yagoda involved as well, and the Will Take Charge Colt moves to the grass. Have you had a chance to see him much physically?
No, not at all. He was in Jersey, and then
He was moved to Florida. This, you know, he raced out of Philadelphia Park, didn't race very good, and they're trying to figure out like what he's going to be best suited for. You know, he's will take charge out of the Tappet mare, so he may have obviously a lot of versatility where he could go either way. So I guess we'll find out, you know, what he is.
Well, in addition to moving to the grass in that run up in that race tomorrow, for those that haven't looked ahead, I happened to look down at this. I was kind of thumbing through races on my way back from California last night, and Todd Pletcher happens to have the Coolmore Warfront colt out of Take Charge Lady debuting in here. The two.
Yeah, pretty scout. Ironic. Yeah, that is pretty ironic. I know that colt too, actually. But, well, you know, we'll see. We'll see what he is. You know, I mean, it's obviously going to be a fair, should be a fair judgment on, as far as competition is concerned as to, like, you know, what he is class-wise.
Well, there's also He's No Lemon, Alex Campbell's homebred out of It's Tea Time. By Lemon Drop Kid, making a second start for Grand Motion. Jose Ortiz, that's the 11. This is a very good group, and we'll be watching this tomorrow, seventh race at Gulfstream. And something I just happened to see that there's a Fupeg connection in here, and King Leo is out of a Fupeg mare. It's a Tapizar colt for Antonio Sano, the 10 horse. And yesterday, Steve, and you'll appreciate it, we were with Neil Drysdale, and it gave us about 15 minutes live at Santa Anita, and it's always a pleasure, and I know one of your favorites.
Right. Neil's, you know, a lifelong friend. I mean, literally professionally. I mean, I've known, you know, Neil since the 80s, and I've been very fortunate to work on a lot of nice horses that, you know, have come across his training, and it's like I said, we date back to the, like, you know, when I first met him out in Chicago back in the 80s, and ended up doing. I've been working for him ever since. In fact, you know, we're essentially planning a trip out to go through some horses at Santa Anita for him. So,
well, we talked about the late David Heerensberger, and really pretty tragic, actually, his death.
Yeah.
And it's still under those circumstances a pleasure to spend time with Neil. For you, I want to do two things. I want to bring up a topic that came up, and then we'll do some year-end thoughts about the 2018 season. And Jane Lyon was with us earlier, Steve, Summer Wind, and we were talking, you know, a lot of her brood mares and a lot of her produce, and she mentioned the full brother, the yearling full brother to American Pharaoh, Prince of Thieves, had a growth plate injury that is going to potentially compromise his racing career. He's just going to apparently go down and get started, but I wanted to bring that up to you because it's not something that you hear all that often. Explain what she meant about a growth plate injury.
Well, essentially, you can do damage to the growth plate at critical times where it's extremely exposed. You know, it's when the growth plate is still open and still active, and there's a lot of long bone growth still coming from it and generated from it. And the problem is that when you do an injury to that, I mean, they have a number of classifications of it, of whether it goes to completely through or halfway through, and certain areas are predisposed. I don't know where this injury occurred, but the areas that happen, you know, most commonly in horses are typically in the femur, and so near the stifle, and or at the end of the tibia, or so near the hock. And they're called Salter-type injuries, Salter-Harris injuries, is the classification they gave them a long time ago in human medicine. And if it tends to bridge it, it can create, in other words, if it goes across the growth plate in any angle, either, like, you know, vertically or even, you know, at an angle, it can create a tremendous disparity in the in the way the bone grows. And the second thing is you create a, you know, a little bit of a misshapen or a bit of a kind of a enlargement or something that looks a little bit abnormal and makes a horse asymmetrical, meaning that you can see it pretty visibly. Depending on where it is, of course. I don't know where this particular injury was. I didn't see the or I didn't hear the conversation, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
She didn't specify either. She did say though that it's given him a crooked. Just what you just said about a distortion is interesting because she did say that the result of it is that he shows as being a little crooked, and so it's clearly an extremity. It doesn't have to be, right? I mean, the growth plate can be it's really kind of a general term, right? Over the skeletal, any number of places.
Right. Well, each long bone in all mammals, and you know, obviously horses as well, has a growth plate to some extent, and it depends on each one's in a little different position, and it's not the same on every bone, and they tend to close at different times. So that when this injury would occur, if it's on an area like the femur or let's say the tibia, or which is both on the hind end. Or let's say the distal radius, in other words, like the forearm of the horse, they tend to close, obviously, you know, a little bit later. So obviously, whenever they would sustain this injury, it would influence, obviously, the younger they are, the more it would probably influence either the shape and or the way that the bone would grow, and maybe possibly it could distort it, obviously, and make it grow a little bit, maybe a bit of an angle or with enlargement or whatever. Or if it's later, obviously it's not going to be nearly as affected. If it's like, you know, bone growth, growth plates injuries on older horses don't really, basically the plate will close down. And typically the plates close down in most horses. You hear this all the time, like in the hock and in the femur, somewhere in their 2-year-old year. And a lot of people will use it as a kind of, I mean, it's for the longest time they used to use it as a safeguard for, like, you don't really push or put a lot of pressure on a horse until the quote unquote growth plates are closed, or to their, you'll hear statements like our knees are closed, things like this.
Right.
And a
We've
lot of people
that.
Will take radiograph, yeah, of the knees to see if the growth plates are closed. But the growth plates can occur in the distal radius, above the knee, in the hock, in the femur, in a lot of different places. And they don't necessarily, I don't think we put as much credence into, you know, when to push forward or when to work or put pressure on horses like they used to. It used to be the old horseman's term of, like, you know, waiting until their knees are closed, quote unquote. And I don't think it's nearly as important as it is. I think nowadays we just gradually, you know, have slipped toward an evaluation of, you know, when it looks like a horse is starting to mature physically when they're filling out and they stop going through episodes where their hind arm is much the top of the croup of their hip is much higher than the withers, and when they get to a point when they look like they're kind of balanced out, they'll push forward with them.
The term itself, Steve, growth plate. I mean, is that a reference to a specific area? I mean, when I think plate, I think of the end per se of a potentially of a bone where bones meet. Is it a specific place and is it bone or is it a combination of bone and cartilage? I mean, what is the plate per se?
Well, that's interesting. That's a great question, actually, because when you see it radiographically on a young horse, a growth plate is a specific anatomical structure or area of the bone. It's not in the joint on the very end. It's actually slightly above the at different areas, whether it be the cannon bone, whether it be the pastern, whether it be the distal radius, femur, you know, the long bones, each one has a specific location. When you actually take a radiograph of it, when it is still active, it will show up as a dark area because it is a it is an area of cartilage, surprisingly enough. And it is the long bone growth is actually occurs by a phenomenon known as cartilaginous switch or changeover, and it is where actually the bone is changed from cartilage, not bone, but the cartilage is morphed or changed into due to hormones and things in the body, switched over to bone. And it's cartilaginous a switch changeover to where they become actual, it turns into bone, the canals turn into bone. And it is also the area with which OCDs, which is a disparity in the changeover, where it never switches from cartilage to bone. It becomes a cystic area that just stays cartilage and grows up to the growth plate or to the joint. And then eventually you can emerge in the joint as a soft area that never switched over to bone, the subchondral area.
And obviously, and so, you know what, we've never, that's amazing that this would come up. And we've never really fully, or it hasn't been in years since we've talked about OCDs. And in other words, that's the area where obviously damage could occur much more easily if it hasn't turned into bone, if it hasn't gotten harder, obviously would make it much easier for a horse to injure itself.
Well, absolutely. And like I said, you know, I mean, if there's a genetic predisposition and then there's a perfect storm of diet and things like this, obviously you're going to, you know, these areas of disparity in laying down a horse that would grow really fast and be on a certain diet of a lot of protein and things like this and not enough calcium and phosphorus to lay down actual bone, those areas become cystic and cartilage and will grow out, and then essentially they cave in, and that is what you consider to be a cystic and or cavernous type of lesion that occurs in the joint. And that's what you try to avoid. That's why we vet these horses so stringently at the yearling sales in particular, and also like when we do private purchases as well. But I mean, it's a little bit more difficult on weanlings because sometimes they haven't finished. You know, these things haven't actually gone into full development yet, and the growth plates are wide open, and they're still actually laying down quite a bit of bone. But and long bone growth is quite an interesting phenomenon, but a lot of things can occur from it, and you need to, you know, be you know, schooled into like what to look for and what can actually occur, and you know when to kind of like you know when to you know look at it as a potential problem and or whatever. But it's just, you know, it's interesting. It's an interesting, I mean, and of course, every horse is an individual. But these are, like I said, if sustained injuries there, it can create, you know, changes in the shape and or, you know, the conformation of the horse and, of course, the way that they are made and how they will travel and how the shape of the leg and how it would get over the ground, whatever. Obviously, if this horse is withstood training up to the point of where it's getting ready to race or getting close, anyway, it's quite an interesting proposition because obviously this must have occurred when this was either a weanling or probably either somewhere in that transition period.
Apparently, exactly, and they. With a full brother of American Pharoah, obviously they're going to try to give him every chance.
But apparently,
yes,
Jane owns Little Princess Emma, and so they must have bred. Obviously, probably now the term actually for long bone growth is called endochondral ossification, is what it's actually called, and what it means is chondral change from cartilage to bone is really scientifically what the actual statement means.
Steve, what do you recommend? And I suppose that this is will give you a chance to put in a pitch for Reborn, because I imagine anything in that arena, and if a horse is predisposed in this area, things that would promote better better bone density, you know, that's got to enter into this. I'm sure there's supplements and things that that you know can be included in a young horse's diet to try to avoid these kinds of issues.
Well, actually, yeah. I mean, you got to be careful about what if you don't put them on too high protein diets, because if it's a horse that comes from a genetically large strain of horses, they tend to grow long bone quicker. They lay down matrix much faster. It means bone matrix with a lot of protein in the diet. And the problem is it won't calcify as efficiently if there's a predisposition genetically for OCDs, which they haven't really come up with the actual genetic code as to exactly how that occurs. But if there is a situation where there's too much protein, too much carbohydrate, not enough calcium and phosphorus, you won't lay down bone efficiently. It seems to be it's in the horses with these type of diets that you see what is a phenomenon known as epiphysitis, or enlargement or inflammation of this area, the growth plate, so to speak. And you can actually see it on foals where it's enlarged. Let's say on foals in particular, it's very noticeable at the end of the fetlock, or near the fetlock, just above the fetlock in the cannon bones. And this is pretty common. You'll see it in hind fetlocks and front fetlocks because the growth plate occurs just above the fetlock. And it's a sign that you need to, sometimes we'll muzzle the foals to let them not bring them to that it produces a tremendous amount of milk and is very, very rich. And we will start some foals early on creep feed, things like this. One thing that has shown a tremendous amount of improvement of actual bone density and hardness is hyaluronic acid, of all things. So it wouldn't necessarily be reborn would help as much, but the Liverson certainly would. It's been shown that the earlier that we put horses on this, the better results we have for both OCD problems and, secondly, epiphysitis and actually tensile strength and density of bone as well.
Amazing. It's just funny that this came up, and it obviously falls right into your into your wheelhouse. How you and I have talked about horses laying down when they're going through growth spurts. How long? How much actual length will horses' extremities? I mean, how much longer will their legs grow in from the time that they're from weanling to what, five, basically, right? I mean, is the full
maturity when everything essentially is maximized, meaning bone density, all plates are closed. There's not much long bone growth. Typically, most horses will attain somewhere on the order of about 90% of their, and 95%+ of their actual mature height, in particular, let's say at the withers, by the time they're at the end of their two-year-old year. So they won't grow a whole lot. You'll see a few that will grow a little later. And one thing that will influence growth plate is they stay a lot taller. Horses tend to get a little taller when they get castrated because testosterone has a lot of play, it has a lot of reaction on the closure of growth plates. So, therefore, geldings tend to be a little taller than colts and stallions. And, of course, obviously, fillies don't, they're not going to, you can't castrate a filly. You could overectomize one if you had tumors or something. And there are a few that get that done to them, but it's very rare, only if you have, like, some extreme, situation, tumors or some sort of, problem. But typically they are what they are. But geldings in particular, if you castrate them early enough, they tend to be a little taller than colts as a rule.
Wow. this is what's so great about these conversations. It just stuff comes up that you just inadvertently wouldn't know. Well, we got about 6 or 7 minutes, Steve, and I appreciate the growth plate portion of this, which was really begun when Jane Lyon referred to an injury, and that's what we like. In these conversations, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Steve, a chance for you to weigh in on the year end, and one of the debates that you know, continues to go. A couple more weeks to it before the votes will start to be accrued. Some thoughts about Horse of the Year from your perspective, the Justify Accelerate discussion.
There's no comparison. Listen, I've been a friend of John Sadler's for a long time. I'm glad to see he broke the streak in such a great race. And he's certainly well-deserving. But, you saw something, quite unique. And I'm in Las Vegas right now because we're doing a trade show out here, and I'm getting ready to go home tomorrow, which is a little earlier than I normally do. But I saw Mike Smith last night because they're having the Jockey Club meetings out here. And I also saw Javier Castellano and Johnny Velasquez, too, so I visited with them. And you saw something unique and rare and special. And when unique, rare, special events occur, I think you are to be rewarded. Now, I know he never raced against older horses, but, I don't think there's a human being on the planet that wouldn't want to win the Kentucky Derby, that wouldn't want to win the Preakness, and certainly wouldn't want to win all three of them in the same year with one horse. And the fact that a horse did all this from the time he was a maiden until he got through the Triple Crown, that's pretty special stuff, So I got to tell you, if I had to take one of them home, that's the one I'd take home, So yeah, I think he deserves to be champion 3-year-old man horse of the year. I think it's kind of a no-brainer. I know he didn't make the rest of the season, but no different than Rachel Alexander. When you do special stuff and do things that are, historic in significance, you're to be rewarded for it, and I think he should be too.
Well, I've landed in that camp as well, and I guess I don't know. There seem to be people that are, to some degree, Steve. I get the sense that it's not so much all pro Accelerate. It feels like there are people that are eager to downplay Justify's accomplishments, and my favorite part of that is the it's a lousy crop somehow that minimizes.
I disagree with that as well. I disagree with that as well. I think it's a pretty damn good crop, and I think he just happened to be the best of a good crop. And he not only did look, they ran at him. The champion 2-year-old from the year before made a run at him. They came at him from a lot of different angles, and obviously it was an abbreviated career, but I think you'll live and breathe a long time before you ever see a horse do what he did. So, when you do special things, you're supposed to get the special awards, and, you're supposed to be. And, I got a feeling if you were to ask John Sadler directly or personally, maybe not necessarily with his owners there, hey, if you had your choice between if you could have had Justify and done that with him or have Accelerate from here, which would you rather have? I think he might have taken that Triple Crown. I just got a feeling he might have gone that way. So.
Well, no, you're certainly right that, for John, it was a special moment, and Accelerate is obviously your Eclipse winner for older horse. What else from the year stays with you, Steve, and what are you looking forward to going into the new year?
Well, obviously, a lot of good young horses for next year, you always have to count Baffert in. The colt that he raced the other day over there at La Salle, that colt looks pretty, and he looks like he could be the next coming. So, there may be another one around the corner. You never know. Maybe that's the jinx of, Triple Crown being so elusive. Maybe somebody's going to prove it's not quite so elusive. But the point is, Bob's mastered, the puzzle of how to get these, and it's tough. He'll tell you that himself, how to get these horses there, while they're growing, while they're changing, and competing and fighting and training and, dealing with all the, the maladies and the backs, offsets and the setbacks and, whatever. And, you got to give the guy his credit. He probably should win the Eclipse Award, too. You know, I mean, probably, hell, I, you know, I, you, 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 show me somebody that did as many things with as many different types of horses, you know, as he did, mainly obviously on dirt, obviously, you know, because Bob doesn't focus on turf at all. But, you know, but I mean, I think he did, you know, his average earnings per start is like 30,000, 35,000 or something. You know, just, I mean, these are, you know, I mean, that's a historic monumental type of deal. I mean, that's pretty awesome. And, you know, guys are supposed to get credit for it. So Bob should be the trainer and maybe go on down the line. You know, I mean, obviously a lot of outfits have you know, that dominated in their ranks. I think the two-year-old filly, you know, that could be an interesting toss-up because that looks like a phenomenal vessel that Chad had. And right. You got to give John Service a ton of credit for the filly that, you know, first the cross-traffic filly. So Jay Walk. Yeah. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see what, you know, which way people go and how they vote.
You know, one horse that's going to get kind of ends up falling through the cracks, and since you mentioned, you know, you mentioned cross traffic, it made me think of, and of course the sire of Jaywalk, but it made me think of somebody that you certainly, I don't know if you're doing work for him when you get to California, but Michael McCarthy with City of Light. And yeah. I the other day, I when I was in California and I saw Michael at Los Al on Saturday, and it occurred to me that he's going to fall through the cracks. I mean, he had a really good year, and yeah. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to be, he's not sprinter and he's not an older horse. So he has to come back next year and you know, knock on the window again.
Well, Mike's a great friend, number one. I mean, I'm a huge fan. I mean, and I do some work for Mike, and I tell you what, I think the world of him. I've known him ever since he worked for Todd, and we've become very close friends. And I can't, you know, I recommend people to him. I recommend owners to go there because, you know, he's focused, he's organized, he does a great job. And Mike is a, you know, a future, you know, his stock will rise tremendously. And I had a chance to look at him because I, you know, at City Light, and he's, you know, like I said, Mike, I can't tell you enough good things about Michael and the job he did with that horse in particular. It's just that I think he's that's a pretty accurate statement. He is probably going to fall the cracks a little bit, Steve, but, you know, I think a lot of horsemen, I mean, Mike won three grade one races with that horse, including a Breeders' Cup race, and yep. He dominated the Breeders' Cup mile, you know, from gate to wire, and just, you know, I mean, you can't say enough good things, and it just goes to show you, people will should take advantage of it. So if you got good horses, Mike McCarthy is certainly an option, for sure.
Yeah, we've went into Breeders' Cup. It was the best, I thought, the best story of the Cup. Michael McCarthy shows up. He's got 32 horses in his care, and he gets four of them to the Breeders' Cup. It's amazing.
Awesome. Amazing. Awesome.
Steve, to you and the family and everybody that works with and for you, and Alex and the whole team, warm wishes. I appreciate all the contributions all year long, and look forward to a terrific 2019.
Thank you so much, Steve. Same to you, and really looking forward to it as well, and we'll talk again.
Absolutely. Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Visit Luberson.com, and you can follow Luberson HA on Twitter and thealldayway.com. I'll remind you, your sport horse, your trail horse, pleasure horse, whatever kind of equine athlete you have at the track or at the ranch or on the farm, doesn't matter. He and Steve and Alex Hassinger will help you. You ask their questions and you'll get answers. Back tomorrow, Sid Fernando and much, much more. Pete Fornatel will catch up on the weekend's contest action, including the Los Al contest. I want to thank Steve and Bill Llewellyn, a lot of fun, and Jane Lyon, Summer Wind. That was great. More Summer Wind if you want to follow Jane and the Farm's exploits on Twitter, and Llewellyn Racing, Four Legs Doc for Steve, and Marcus Hirsch, DRF Hirsch from Hong Kong, with a full report from his trip. with a look ahead to fairgrounds and more. And looking ahead to the racing today, Mahoning Valley, Mountaineer Parks, Portland Meadows, Remington, with some early week action, Turf Paradise, and Zia. Good luck if you're playing. Back with you tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock. If you missed anything, replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM or visit the website. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.